Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you like this show and you want to help support us? Do you want us to stay ad-free? Do you want extra episodes every month? Of course you do. Well, then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro and become a Patreon supporter of this very show. Programs and welcome back to another edition of the Nerd Cave Retro Show. My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
I'm still recovering from Thanksgiving. I don't know about you, but the food coma has lasted almost a week now.
You know, I say this, I've said this every year of Thanksgiving, but I feel like I gained about 20 pounds after all the food that I ate on Thanksgiving.
Same here. I'm still working on leftovers too. We just started finishing up leftovers today.
Yeah, we finished ours, I think, the Sunday or Monday after Thanksgiving, which we didn't get a ton of leftovers just because we ate so much food during lunch that it was like, oh, I really don't want to food, much less look at it.
It's just the two of us, and we made so much food. We made enough food for like 12 people.
That's impressive.
Mixmaster was asking us if we ever thought about changing the music. Not really. I like our theme music. We've had it since the beginning, and we're gonna keep it till the day we pod fade when we're like 80.
I thought about making that joke after episode 200. That we were going to pod fade.
Yeah. Nah, we're not going anywhere anytime soon.
But no, so random trivia fact about the theme song of this show. It was, Zach Dykes, who was one of my co-hosts on the Nerd Cave podcast back in the day, he wrote 5 or 6 songs to possibly use for the intro to that show. Mm-hmm. And one of them was obviously unused, and we used that for Nerd Cave Retro, so... Little trivia fact there for you guys.
And if we ever do plan on changing it, I have like 10 different theme songs that I had written over the years for like Broke Nerdcast and Pop Culture Palette. I'm sure I could recycle one of those, even one of the ones that were never used.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that it's, to me, just become a part of the show.
Oh, yeah. It's so bouncy and...
Yeah, it's like, you know, every time that we come on the show live, I'm just... kind of bobbing my head to it's just that catchy beat.
So what'd you play over the Thanksgiving holidays?
So Nintendo was actually doing a really good sale on Black Friday. So I downloaded a few games, and I had, what did I get? I got the remastered Ghostbusters video game, which I've never played, but really excited to because I've heard nothing but good things. I got the remastered Crash Team Racing, which to me is a very underrated racing game. So I'm excited to go back and play that again.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got Sonic Forces, which has gotten very mixed reviews since it came out. And so I told myself it's eventually going to go on sale for really cheap. So then I'll get it. Well, it was $10. So I was like, this is when I'll finally break down and get it. I'll give a very quick review. It's not a good game. Here's the thing. Sonic, as we've documented, didn't have the best transition from 2D to 3D. Now, the story of the game is kind of cool, but the gameplay of it, like the controls are kind of sloppy. The camera issues have plagued that series since it jumped to 3D, and they haven't really done much to fix it, in my opinion. It's just a very okay game.
Yeah.
Very okay. What about you?
Well, I did get the game that we're going to be reviewing tonight. I got on the Switch sale. I got Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Played that all weekend. That's all I did was play that game. That's it. Nothing else.
It's a good game to play.
Yeah, it's been great. And I got quite a few nice things to say about it tonight.
I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on it. As someone who never played the original, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Axe Blade and Mixmaster both say they're not going to be able to join us when we move to Thursday nights in January. And that sucks. Because, yeah. I don't know. It just works better for both of us to be on Thursday nights. And maybe something will pan out after a while. Because I don't know if anybody... if you're new to the show or whatever, we do record live on Twitch on Wednesday nights at 7:30. And coming up in January, we're moving to Thursday nights at 8. So if you want to join us live, we'll be live at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights after January 1st.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, and something we're going to have to worry about too, is when baseball comes back.
Yeah, that
too. In April, so... So I'm sure that, you know, for those who have listened to the show since the beginning, you know, we have baseball here in Pensacola between the months of April and August. Now, it could very well be different because of COVID restrictions. We don't really know exactly what's going to happen yet, yeah. But it's going to affect the show at some point. And I mean, it has since we've done it, but we've worked through it. So.
Yeah, we always find some way to work around it.
Yeah, so... You know, we'll probably have the odd days where it's like, oh, well, let's record, you know, Tuesday night or Sunday night.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. So there'll be days that we do the show live besides Thursday coming up.
Yes, Mixmaster. It's going to be 8 Central Thursday nights. And Staff Sergeant Sketch has joined us in the chat, getting a lively chat room tonight. And yeah. Thank you guys for joining us. And I hope all you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I know it was hard this year with COVID, not being able to be around family and all that stuff. So hopefully after the first of the year, things will get back to normal somewhat once we get, you know, this virus under control so we can actually start acting like humans again. That'll be nice.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But let's go ahead and move into the news, shall we?
Let's do it.
This is a story we got from I Am The Rampage in our email. This is from NintendoLife.com. Sega just showed off a prototype handheld for the first time ever. Sega turns 60 this year, and the company's been celebrating that fact in a wider range of ways. One of which is a special video history lesson which runs through the company's home hardware lineage. It was held by Sega producer-manager Hiroyuki Miyazaki and takes us from the early days of 1983's SG-1000, released in Japan as the same day as the Nintendo's Famicom, right the way up to Sega's final home console, the Dreamcast. During the talk, Miyazaki goes into detail on how Sega was fond of using the names of planets as the internal code names for the systems, the exception being the Saturn, which retained its code name right up the way to launch. He speaks about the Sega Nomad, a portable Mega Drive system which was released in North America in 1995 and was Sega's final attempt to wrestle control of the handheld market away from Nintendo. Spoiler, it didn't work. A nice surprise was that Miyazaki showed off a prototype of the console that has, up until now, never been seen in public. Still retaining the Venus codename, the prototype Nomad is rather fetching and arguably more attractive than the oddly shaped system we actually got. And there is a video on, they have that video here on the Nintendo Life site. So if you're interested in looking at that video, it's kind of cool looking, even though the colors are kind of drab. I think if they would have actually colored this thing, if, you know, a different palette of colors, this thing probably would have taken off pretty well.
It reminds me of an 80s Apple product.
It does.
And I'll throw this out there, too. I love the name Nomad.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool name for a handheld.
That's actually a really good name for a handheld. Something that, you know, you could take on the go. Like a Nomad. I guess that's the reason behind it, but still, it's a good name.
I wonder how the battery life was compared to the GameCube.
Well, it did say it was a little battery hungry.
Yeah, I mean, I've told stories on the show about having the Game Gear, and essentially, like, the only time I can play it extensively is if you plug it into a wall.
Yeah,
which defeats the purpose of it being a handheld console.
Yeah,
but no, this looks really cool. Like, I'm curious as what would have happened, you know, had they released this. I mean, I still think Game Boy would have won the battle, but I'd be curious to see how this would have fared, you know, had it been released as planned.
Yeah, I mean, I like the look of it. Was it color? Or was it monochrome?
I do not know.
Because if this thing was, if this thing was like a kind of like a Game Gear, I don't know. I think it maybe, it might have taken, like you said, might have taken away some of that, some of Nintendo's stronghold on the handheld market.
Yeah. I love the comments on this article. So, like, the prototype name was Venus. One of the responses is, "I'm your Venus. I'm your fire at your desire." From Bananarama.
Bananarama.
Oh, man. What a name.
Somebody said, strangely, this article makes me want to shave my legs. What does that mean? Someone wrote, just looking at it drains all the AAAs in my house.
Yep.
Yeah. I bet this thing took like 6 AAs in the back, probably. And it lasted 20 minutes.
That's what the Game Gear took, I think, was 6 AAs. Yeah. You can go through some batteries with the Game Gear.
I'm sure.
All right, I've been waiting for days to talk about this, and I'm so glad you put it on the Google Doc.
Oh, yeah.
From CNN.com, Super Nintendo World is opening at Universal Studios Japan in February. Here's a sneak peek. Get ready to slap on your Mario Kart racing gear and toss some Koopa shells. The world's first Super Nintendo World is set to open inside the Universal Studios Japan theme park in Osaka on February 4th, 2021. Executive producer Thomas Gerati, I assume is how it's pronounced, of Universal Creative, the innovation and creative arm of Universal Studios, announced the opening date during a press conference on Monday inside the park's newly renovated Bowser Castle. He said the new addition to Universal Studios will offer an experience that can be found nowhere else in the world. It includes attractions based on the popular Mario series of games, which was first introduced in the 1980s, as well as restaurants and gift shops. If they don't have a stand where mushrooms are prepared in different ways,
yeah,
that is a major disservice.
I was thinking that exact same thing.
But I would highly recommend everyone go look at the pictures that were posted. Yeah. So there's 4 photos. So there's Mario Kart, which I believe is going to incorporate augmented reality. There is a there's Bowser's Castle with a giant gold Bowser statue that, like, I'm not gonna lie,
dude.
There's a GIF, I believe it's of James McAvoy, when he's like really sweaty and he's like waving his face with a giant like fan or a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That was after I saw that picture. I'm just like, I have to go there right now.
Dude, the picture they have, like, looking up the stairs at the Bowser statue is so freaking cool.
Mm-hmm. Then they've also got the Mario Kart trophies. There's one, there's, I believe, a Universal logo trophy as well. It's not pictured in the article, but I remember seeing it on Twitter.
Dude, I want to go to Japan so bad, but that's so expensive. Then you have to, this is, from what I hear, you have to, it's sort of like what they did with Galaxy's Edge, where you have to get your pass, like, and time that you're going to, you have to book your time that you're going to be in there. So I would imagine for at least the first year or two, it's going to be a pain in the ass to try and get in here. So I mean, going to Japan's like one of my big goals, because I love Japan. I want to go. I've always wanted to go. It's always been a money issue. But if they build one of these in Florida or California, dude, I will make the drive to go there.
Oh, 100%. Like, there will be no debate on it. Axeblade says Nerd Cave Meetup 2021 at Super Nintendo World.
I'll be there.
No, as I believe it is in the cards for it to be built in Universal Studios in Orlando.
I think, you know, the reason they... But the thing is, you look at it, it's kind of small, because it's just a land. If you've ever been to like Islands of Adventure or something like that, it's not an entire park. It's more like, it's a section of the park. And they've got so much room in Florida to expand and build things. Dude, if they build it in Florida, I would want it to be like three times the size of this. Like, I would want, you know, Super Mario section. I want like a Metroid section. I want everything. I want it all.
This is what they should do if they were to make like a full theme park like this.
I want an entire Hyrule section.
I think at the middle of the whole park, you have to put Peach's Castle.
Yeah.
But somewhere off to the side, you got to have Hyrule.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Hyrule Castle. Give me the Kokiri Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, create holograms of some Zoras and I will swim with them.
Give me Hyrule or give me death.
Exactly.
But this overhead picture looks awesome, but it does look like, I don't know if this is the whole section here, this the whole little park, but it looks like you could go through this in like a day, if that, like half a day.
Yeah. Agreed. Also, like, top three thing that I think they need to have at this thing, Donkey Kong themed roller coaster.
Oh, dude. Yes. They got to have a Donkey Kong section.
Base it on Donkey Kong Country. You're in the cart is a barrel and you go through Donkey Kong Island. That would be sick.
Oh, can you imagine if they somehow figured out how to shoot you from barrel to barrel? That'd be awesome.
I would urinate myself.
Yeah, I would too. But that just seems like
he wants to ride a Pona.
That seems like the three things that would be a no-brainer. You have Super Mario Land, you'd have Hyrule, and you'd have Donkey Kong Country. Like,
yep.
That's, if you're gonna do it right.
And somewhere in Donkey Kong Country, you have to have a small banana stand.
Yeah. Again, you got to have banana smoothies, banana ice cream, banana everything. Banana splits.
Banana Dole Whip.
Yeah, banana Dole Whips. Oh, Wally would love the banana Dole Whips.
Well, no lie, at Animal Kingdom in Disney World, one of my favorite places to go is the small fruit stand. And they sell like fresh apples, fresh bananas, and they're so freaking good.
Yeah.
It's a very small thing, but like anytime I go to Animal Kingdom, I have to go by that fruit stand.
Now I'm thinking about Dole Whips. I want one right now.
Oh man.
Dole Whips are so
good. I had
good.
A Dole Whip in San Diego. It was really good.
If you've never had a Dole Whip, you're missing out on one of the greatest frosty treats that has ever been invented.
You want to talk about something I can gain some weight on?
Oh,
that's some Dole Whip.
Dole Whips are so good.
Dole Whip.
For our next story, if I can get back to the Google Doc, let's see. The Sega Genesis had a VR headset that never shipped, but now you can try it for yourself virtually. This is on TheVerge.com. In the annals of video games, there are an uncountable number of products, canceled games, scrapped hardware, that feel as though they've been lost to time. But most of the time, they're just not only forgotten and lost. And that's where the Video Game History Foundation steps in. As the name suggests, the foundation is an organization that preserves the history of video games piece by piece. Today, they've outdone themselves. The foundation's head digital conservationist, Rich Whitehouse, has written a long blog post about how he managed to resurrect a canceled game, Nuclear Rush, that was planned for the Sega Genesis VR helmet. What's more, Whitehouse actually managed to emulate the Sega VR headset hardware so it runs on current-gen VR headsets. The Sega VR headset, which never made it beyond a prototype, was a marvel of early 90s engineering, equipped with a high-frequency inertial measurement unit and two LCD screens. The Sega VR headset shares a lot of fundamental design with today's VR headsets. That design was nothing short of revolutionary when Sega officially unveiled the unit to journalists and retailers in 93, promising to break new ground on the frontier of virtual reality. They miraculously hit their $200 target thanks to technology licensed from a startup company called Ono Sendai, whose patented tracking solution could be manufactured for just $1. I don't know if about you, but this headset looks kind of cool. Like it does, it looks like something you would buy now.
And it's crazy to think that VR was around back then.
Yeah.
But I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago. I could be a bit off on my time, but VR was making a little bit of a comeback because I know Samsung did a VR headset.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept hearing more and more about virtual reality. And it's sad, but when I think of virtual reality, the first thing I think of is the Virtual Boy.
Yeah. well, I mean, you look at the stuff they're coming out with now, like the Oculus Rift and all that kind of stuff. This headset actually looks like something you would buy now. Like you look at the Virtual Boy and it's so awkward. You know, it sits on that stand. You got to put your face into it. It gave you migraine after about 10 minutes of playing it. I'd be interested to, if I had a Vive or something like that, I would want to actually play this and see what Sega was doing back then.
Yeah, because I had no idea they were even working on a VR headset.
I didn't either until I saw this article. I was like, wow. I wonder why, and this was in 93 too. Like, why did this never come out?
Yeah, because Sega would have been, they would have been very prevalent by this time. So no, I have no clue why it was never completed, but it'd be cool to see one of these in action.
Yeah. What year did the Virtual Boy come out? Like 96, 97?
Stand by and I'll tell you.
So they were at least a couple of years ahead of Nintendo. With a better-looking headset.
Oh, for sure. It was Virtual Boy was released in Japan July 21st, 95, and in North America, August 14th of 95.
Oh, yeah, so they were good 2 years ahead.
They could have beaten Nintendo to the punch.
Axeplay said he remembers having the Sega 3D glasses for Master System. It sucked.
I forgot about those.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. Now I remember now looking at the advertisements for the Sega Master System, like in the Sears Christmas catalog, and it had the little 3D glasses.
Yep. Oh man, technology's come a long way.
Yes, it has.
And our last story comes to us once again from NintendoLife.com. Doom Eternal Switch eShop file size revealed. The little subline says, rip and clear some space. Before Bethesda locked in a release date for Doom Eternal, there were rumors the physical version had been axed. Now it has been confirmed this title will be a digital-only release. This leaves Switch owners with no option but to make some space on their systems if they want to play it. So how much room will the sequel actually require? In case you missed our interview with Panic Button about the game, The file size clocks in at a meager 17.5 gigs.
Mm-hmm. I want to get this. We talked about it before the show. I want to get this so I can play it over Christmas, but that's a lot of space.
And especially as someone who has been, has made the transition to doing digital purchases,
mm-hmm.
that's a lot.
Yeah.
I get it, but it's still a lot.
Honestly, I would much rather have gotten a physical release, especially for something this big. So I don't know. I might actually just get this on the PS4 or something. I would love to have this on my Switch, but that's a big file size.
Well, and it continues by saying, how does this compare to 2016's Doom? That was a little bit bigger, clocking in at 22 gigs. But then ID Software's classic title Doom 2 only requires 288 megabytes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks great. This screenshot looks awesome.
Oh, for sure. But my thing is, like, I'm with you. With a game like this, I think you should have a physical release as an option. I think more often than not, even though so many more people have gone to digital, mm-hmm. you should still have the physical aspect of it.
Yeah, especially for a game like this. Like, this is a franchise that people that are into Doom have been into Doom since, you know, it first came out in like 92, 93. Like, yeah. I've been playing Doom since 93, 94, when I was in 11th grade. And, dude, I mean, I've played most of the Doom games. I never played the 2016 Doom, and I haven't played the newest Doom. I like the ones that that they had out for the Xbox and stuff. Like, I love the Doom series. I really want to play this. But like you said, that's kind of a chunk to take out of your, you know, your file, your hard drive on the Switch. That's just, man, I don't know what they're thinking with not doing a physical release.
Mixmaster says he misses the JCPenney and Sears catalog.
Yeah, me too.
You could seriously hurt somebody with that Sears catalog.
Yeah. That was like the best day when that came in the mail.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so good.
Yep.
We were kids at the right time.
We were, and I was talking about that with my girlfriend earlier today, because they're doing, you know, Christmas movie marathons. We were like, because she's a little bit younger than I am, but we were like, we were kids at the right time. Like, I wouldn't want to be a kid now.
Oh, yeah. Me neither. I mean, who would want to be a kid during COVID?
I know. Yeah.
No, thank you. But it's time for this month in video game history. In December of 1980, Data East releases the Deco Cassette System, the first standardized arcade platform for which many games are developed. What did the Deco Arcades Cassettes... Oh, yeah, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm. The first standardized arcade system that allowed arcade owners to change games.
Mm-hmm.
So you would buy a base cabinet, and the games would be stored on audio cassettes. And this gave you the ability to change out the tapes and
that's
put
cool.
different games in.
Sort of an early cartridge system.
Yeah. Yeah, in a way. I would love one day to have like a physical, like old arcade machine.
Oh, me too.
Something like that. Like the mini ones are cool and all, but to have like an old school, like my dream one day is to have, or one of my dreams, I should say, to have a giant Ninja Turtles arcade machine.
Yeah, same. That would be the one. I want that, and I want a Tron machine.
Oh, Tron would be great. Tron would be really cool. December 12th of 1983, Nintendo publishes Donkey Kong Jr. Math for the Famicom. Everyone loves a good Nintendo educational
game. One of Joey Image's favorite games.
Yep, I thought of him whenever I put that in there.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
So shout out to Joey Image.
Who doesn't want to learn math when they're playing video games?
Yeah, it's like whenever you're playing Mario is Missing, you learn about geography and where things are in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
I don't want to learn. December 12th of 1983, Nintendo publishes December 1984, Irem releases Kung Fu Master and lays the foundations for the beat-em-up genre. Kung Fu Master.
I think one of the most iconic-looking arcade cabinets. When you look at that flyer, like, you instantly know what Kung Fu Master is.
Yeah. I mean, this was one of the first games I ever played for the Nintendo, too. Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a good memory.
I have seen, you know, in my limited experience with arcades, I remember seeing Kung Fu Master quite a bit.
Yeah.
Even, you know, into the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It was still prevalent in arcades.
That was an arcade staple.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. December 1st of 1988, Nintendo releases Zelda 2: The Adventure of Link in America.
Boo.
The game had been released nearly 2 years earlier in Japan on the Famicom Disk System before America even saw the first Legend of Zelda. It's a shame it didn't stay there.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that same thing.
I mean, it's definitely the redheaded stepchild of the Zelda franchise. Go ahead.
It's a game.
Yeah.
It's
one of those things that I feel like, because we mentioned this when we had Joey Image on when we did the Halloween episode. It's almost like Halloween 3, but we're on the opposite side of the argument.
Yeah.
If this had nothing to do with the Zelda franchise, I'll be like, it's not a bad game.
Yeah.
But because it's Zelda and it was released after one of the most iconic video games ever made, you're like, what is this? This isn't Mario. It's supposed to be Zelda.
Exactly. Maybe.
You're going to love this next one.
All right, let's see. December 2nd of 1989, the world premiere of the Universal Pictures film The Wizard is held at the Cineplex Odeon Theater in Universal City, California. The film, starring Fred Savage, Luke Edwards, Jenny Lewis, Christian Slater, and Beau Bridges, tells the story of two brothers who travel to a video game tournament. Ah, I love The Wizard.
California.
Oh, Mixmaster says he's unsubscribed now because of our thoughts on the two. I'm sorry, man. I don't like that game at all.
Yeah, it's the one good thing about it is that it introduced Dark Link. Because that was a cool callback in Ocarina of Time when you're in the Water Temple and you have to fight him. But other than that, it's a very mad game.
I really did try to go back and give it the benefit of the doubt and try to play it and play it on its own merit. But man, I got like an hour or two into it and I was like, man, I don't want to play this. This is not Legend of Zelda.
Axeblade says, would have loved to see The Wizard back in theaters.
Oh, yeah. I think I did see it in theaters back in the day. I know I had a video, VHS tape. I taped it off of HBO. Or no, actually, I had rented it and made a copy of it with two VCRs. And I wore that tape out, man.
Yeah, I used to rent it all the time from the video store we had back in my hometown, and I was the only one who would rent it, so they just sold it to my mom.
Yeah.
And then years later, like, I hadn't seen the movie in a decade plus. When it was first released on DVD, I randomly saw it in Walmart, and instantly I was like, I gotta get it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, holy crap, I haven't seen anything related to this movie in 15 years.
I still have to get that Blu-ray release of it.
Yeah, I do too. Let's see. December 4th of 1992, Mega Man 5 is released by Capcom in the United States.
Another one eventually I have to get to and review.
It seems like November and December are the popular months for Mega Man.
Oh, yeah.
They would always be released around that time. Yeah, oh, for sure.
Christmas game.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to get around to playing some of the Mega Man games at some point. No,
you should start with Mega Man 11 on the Switch. That one was really good.
I'm down with that. Yeah.
December 3rd of 1996, LucasArts releases Star Wars Shadows of the Empire. for the Nintendo 64. Still angry that that Shadows of the Empire is no longer canon.
One of the biggest travesties of the Disney purchase.
Damn you, Disney.
Because when it comes to what's now known as the Legends portion of the Star Wars universe, this has to be the most known. Because you had the novel, you had the graphic novel, you had the video game. There was, I remember seeing it in, you know, Books a Million on CD for an audiobook.
Yeah.
Like the Shadows of the Empire was huge when it came out.
Well, I mean, it was books and video games and comic books, and they even released a soundtrack for a movie that never existed. You know, like, it was a huge Star Wars release, and I just don't understand. I mean, it was from LucasArts, and I don't know why. I still think it should be canon. Hello, Retro Game Brews. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Retro Game Brews.
But yeah, that's just dumb that they don't, that Shadows of the Empire is no longer canon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that I think, because it took place kind of in that sweet spot of Star Wars. You know, it takes place between Empire and Jedi and tells what happens between those two movies.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, if they were to do a Boba Fett movie or even a miniseries, tell the story of how he got Han Solo to Jabba.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take, because that's, to me, the best elements from the Shadows of the Empire story, or all the bounty hunters like IG-88, Bosk, Dengar, all of them trying to find Boba Fett, and he outsmarts all of them.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but the part where you're on the trash planet and you're being chased by IG-88 is still one of the most frightening things I've ever been through in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Being chased by IG-88, that was so cool.
I loved it.
Oh, that, yeah, no, Mixmaster, that menu music was great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, man.
But to close us out for this month in video game history, on December 15th of 1998, Nintendo releases The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX for the Game Boy Color, not D-Generation X from WWF. But
yeah,
this was, so when the Game Boy Color came out, it was this huge deal that Nintendo had a system, or a handheld system, that played games in color. So they went back and remastered Link's Awakening with an extra dungeon called the Color Dungeon, where when you beat the final boss, you get the choice of either red armor or blue armor, where red increases your offense and blue increases your defense. But you could only use it, or you can only access that dungeon if you had a Game Boy Color, because you were quizzed at the beginning of the dungeon to guess the colors of different things.
Mm.
And you obviously can't if you have a black and white Game Boy.
Yeah.
So it's been a game that I've gone back and replayed several times, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, yeah. And before we go into the review tonight, Derek has shout-outs.
As always, we like to shout out our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout out Armez Jackson, Axeblade07, Daniel Salmon, John Jekyll, a.k.a. Mixmaster, Carlos Longoria, Staff Sergeant Sketch, Randy Bailey, and Tyler Watson. Thank you guys so much for your continued contributions. And because you've kept us at the $50 level, we will continue to do fun commentary tracks. We recently did the Batman Mask of the Phantasm commentary. I don't know about you, but it was great to go back and watch that movie again.
That's the bad thing. When we actually watch something that we like, we tend to get quiet and be like, oh yeah, we're supposed to be talking now.
Yeah. We're supposed to be making fun of this, not enjoying it.
But that one was great. It's available right now on Patreon. You can get to it on the lowest Patreon level. You get it way earlier than everybody else. So head on over there, patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. Sling us a couple bucks a month. Help keep the lights on over here, and we'll keep doing those commentary tracks every month.
And as a brand new addition, we mentioned this last week on the show, but starting in January, we're going to do monthly franchise discussions. So the first poll is up on the Patreon page, and if I remember correctly, I think Metroid is actually in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really good options regardless of what's discussed. So if you haven't voted yet, head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro.
And tonight we're going to be talking about Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, the remaster for the Nintendo Switch. It's an action-adventure game developed by Grezzo and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo Switch. It was released on September 20th, 2019. It is a remake of the 1993 game for the Game Boy. It retains the original top-down perspective and gameplay, along with elements from the 1998 re-release, Link's Awakening DX. The game features a retro-modern art style, unique within the series with toy-like character designs, diorama-like world designs, and tilt-shift visuals that evoke the original game's presentation on the Game Boy. As of March 2020, the game has sold over 4 million copies worldwide, making it one of the best-selling Nintendo Switch games. I don't know about you, but the first thing that really struck me about the game was the look of it, and like that that retro modern art style. It's perfect. It's so good, and I still want a Link to the Past remake done this way. I want a brand new Zelda game done this way, like give a whole brand new story. Oh, this game is so good, and jump in, because I'll just ramble about how good this game is.
Well, the thing about the art style and the graphics of the game, we've touched on this before, but since Twilight Princess, Zelda really hasn't done anything that looks ultra realistic. It's had some type of an animation feel to it.
Yeah.
And when I saw the first trailer for this, because, you know, I played the original back when it was out for the Game Boy, and when I saw this was being remade, I lost it. Like, I was literally like kind of like legitimately giddy about the whole thing, because this game never got the attention that it deserved because of the system that it was for. And yeah, the gameplay is very similar to Link to the Past, but that's part of its charm. Yeah. Like, to me, you can make the argument that Link to the Past is a perfect Zelda game. And don't get me wrong, like, I love Ocarina of Time. I like Majora's Mask. I love Breath of the Wild. But that top-down view of going through dungeons and solving puzzles and finding the item that you need to get past certain points in the dungeon, that old-school Zelda side, and it goes back to the original one, there's just something magical. Mm-hmm. About that style of gameplay for Zelda. And I think the art style works perfectly for Zelda. Like, I love the animated aspect of the Zelda franchise. And I think because of the environment, I think of the characters, and honestly, just the whole game overall in general, I think the art style is perfect.
Yeah. Retro Game Bruce said it, he feels like you're reading his mind. Because you know me and my love for Link to the Past. So playing this, as soon as I jumped into the game and started playing it, this game has, over this last week, like, it has scratched every video game itch I've had for the last, I can't tell you how long. I've been searching for the perfect game to play that just, you know, just scratches every itch that you have. And I don't know what it is about the top-down Zelda games. Even going back to the original, like, I can sit and play the original for hours. I can play Link to the Past from beginning to end. You know, and something about that top-down and the way this game looks, you know, that plastic look to everything. Like, it looks, some of it looks real, some of it looks plastic, but it looks like a little playset. Like, you can just reach into the screen and, like, move stuff around, you know? It's just, it's magic. And it's perfect. It's a perfect video game, is all I can say. And I don't know what else I can possibly say about it, other than it's perfect. And I have had so much fun playing this game the last few days. I have gotten, and we've talked about it before, where, you know, with Breath of the Wild, they had the shrines and they don't have the dungeons. That was one of the biggest things I felt was missing from Breath of the Wild, is there's something about the dungeons, and that's just a staple of Zelda games for me, is dungeons. Going into the dungeons, getting, you know, finding the map, finding the compass, getting your upgrades, you know, getting lots of rupees and all the things you need to progress through the game, you know, new weapons, what have you. Like, that's the Zelda experience to me. And I think, I hope in Breath of the Wild 2, they bring back dungeons, or maybe a mix of dungeons and shrines. But when it comes to just Zelda in general, like, this game, I want more games in this style. I want them to do a Link to the Past remake. I want them to do a brand new Zelda adventure. And it can't be that hard to make new Zelda adventures in this style.
Well, and I think next year, it being the 35th anniversary of the franchise, I think we are going to get similar to what we saw with the Mario All-Stars, the 3D All-Stars compilation. I think we will get something like that, maybe with Ocarina of Time, with Majora's Mask, and maybe like a Skyward Sword. If they did a remake of Link to the Past in this style, like, you would probably be able to hear me scream from your apartment.
Yeah. You and me both.
Let me ask you this. So this game takes place, it does take place in Hyrule. It's set on Koholint Island.
Yeah.
Where basically what happens, for those who haven't played the game, so this is the same Link from Link to the Past. He is caught up in a storm. He's on his ship sailing. He's caught in a storm and he washes up on this island that he learns is named Koholint Island. He's rescued by a girl named Marin, and he goes on a quest to find the eight instruments of the sirens to awaken the windfish, who is asleep in a giant egg that sits on top of the highest mountain on the island. So what did you think about the story being taken away from Hyrule, and what have you thought of the story itself?
I like the story. It's simple, and it really kind of, because of its simplicity, it kind of sucks you in, and you kind of learn a little bit more about what's going on as you go through the game. I mean, that's pretty standard, but, you know, it's different. Like you said, it's different from other Zelda games. Doesn't take place in Hyrule. That doesn't bother me at all. The cool thing I find about it, it's still a lot of the same enemies from Hyrule, and a lot of enemies from Super Mario Land. You know, you got Goombas and
Loopers.
Yeah, and that, I was shocked when those things popped up. I'm like, whoa, we're like crossing the streams here. a little bit. And I'm totally okay with that. And but yeah, as far as the story goes, like we talked about, I'm not quite finished yet. I'm on the very last dungeon right now before going up against the Windfish, and then I'm done. And but man, the story has kept me going. The gameplay's kept me going. Just going and finding all the secrets. That's another thing. The fun thing about Zelda is finding all the little secrets. You know, finding the cracks in all the walls and the hidden tunnels and figuring out all the puzzles and, you know, finding one hidden area that you can't quite get to yet. And you can't figure out how you're supposed to get through it until later in the game when you get, you know, a new weapon or something that allows you to go back to that secret area and get past it. So that's the magic of the Zelda games.
Well, and I feel like, too, especially with this game, there are just the right amount of collectibles. So there are side quests you can do. One where you it starts out with you winning a Yoshi doll, another yeah. Mario reference. You win a Yoshi doll and this crane machine in Mabe Village, and then you trade it for an item. Then you trade that item for something else.
Yeah.
And it eventually gets you. I don't know if you've collected all the items yet.
Yeah, I have. But, finished that last night, that whole quest line.
It ends with you being able to get the boomerang, which yeah. is actually one of the most powerful weapons in the entire game if you use it right.
Yeah.
But there's that. There's also finding the seashells. And if you find a certain amount, then you get your sword upgraded. So in the color dungeon that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Link's Awakening DX, that's in the remake. So you can get a tunic or a blue tunic. So I always go with the blue tunic because it raises your defense.
That's what I
Because your offense is going to get increased anyway when you get the upgraded sword. So yeah. that makes you like the ultimate fighting machine.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I mean, I knew you would because I knew you're a huge fan of Link to the Past, and this game is, as we've mentioned, very similar. I'm just happy that it sold the amount of units that it has because it's such a good and overlooked Zelda game.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it follows the formula, but it's not in Hyrule. It's got to me, a pretty good story. Like you said, it's simplistic, but it's good to follow, and it's, to me, a good story. There's enough side quests to keep you busy where you can do stuff other than go to each dungeon and mm-hmm. get the different instruments.
Yeah.
It's just such a good game, and I was so happy that it was remade. And I've played through the remake, I think, twice now. It's just been so fun to go back and play.
Yeah, it's definitely something that has replay value, too. You know, after you get through it that first time, it seems like it would be even more fun the second time because you know a little bit better how to solve some of the puzzles. You can get through things a little bit quicker. And it's just, I like you said, I'm glad that it sold as many copies as it did, because I still am holding out hope that we're going to finally get a Link to the Past remake. And you know, with the 35th anniversary coming up next year, it's very possible. What if we get something, a remake of the very first Legend of Zelda in this style? I'd be down for that.
What if we get both?
And well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. We could get the Zelda All-Stars. We get Zelda, original Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, and I don't know if I want Zelda 2 in there.
Nah, we can leave that out.
Yeah, we can leave that one out.
Yeah. It'd be cool if, say, like early next year they release, let's say, the remakes of Link to the Past and the original game. Then maybe in the summer we get the 3D All-Stars, like what we mentioned with Mario, with Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and Skyward Sword. Because to me, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess got their remakes on the Wii U. Now they can port those over.
Yeah, that's the thing. They need to go ahead and port those over.
Because I would love to play through Wind Waker again. But then have it, the culmination of it would be around the holidays, Breath of the Wild 2.
Yeah.
If that happens, 2021 would be like the greatest year ever.
It's the year of Zelda.
I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
You can't.
It's the 35th anniversary of Metroid too, so it's like they have a chance to do some really good stuff all throughout the year.
Yeah, I really hope that they do have something big planned for Zelda and Metroid. I'm just hoping we got to get Metroid Prime 4 next year. We have to.
I mean, again, they could do a remastered version of the Metroid Prime trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe release it in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, you can do both Zelda and Metroid for Christmas.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
You don't have to do one.
Next year would be a big money year for, not that the past few years haven't been big money years for Nintendo, but if they come out with some Zelda remakes, as Breath of the Wild 2, some Metroid remakes, and then Metroid Prime 4 next year, holy crap, Nintendo's going to make some money. They've already got my money. I'm just waiting for them to give me the games.
Yeah, Axblade07 says, I bet they do have a huge Zelda celebration next year with ports and Breath of the Wild 2.
Mm-hmm.
It makes total sense, which is why Nintendo probably won't do it. But yeah. Again, it makes total sense.
Yeah. But man, as far as the Link's Awakening remaster, dude, I don't think I could possibly give a game a higher score than what I could give this one. I mean, we do a scale of 1 to 10. This gets a solid 10 because this has been exactly what I needed. And it's nothing more, nothing less. It is a perfect Zelda game. Even though it doesn't have Zelda, it doesn't have Hyrule, it has Link, but it is the Link from A Link to the Past. So if you like Link to the Past, which it's one of my favorite video games of all time, you're going to like this game. And I did play this on the Game Boy back in 1991 when it first came out. Because the Game Boy I got, this was the pack-in game for the Game Boy. And I bought it specifically for this game. But I was just never really impressed with the Game Boy itself. So I never finished it back then.
Yeah, I get that too, because the Game Boy graphics weren't that great, but the good thing about Link's Awakening was that the gameplay was still there. Like, it played exactly like Link to the Past.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I fell in love with it. And Mixmaster mentioned the Rock's Feather, one of the items that you get in this game, because it gives you an ability that Link very rarely has, and that's the ability to jump.
Yeah.
But see, like, that was incorporating a little bit of Zelda 2, but the way they did it made sense, and I actually really liked it.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about this game, is you can button map with some of the different abilities that you get, so you can switch pretty easily some of your abilities, and that was a cool thing I found about the game too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Axblade says, hearing rumors of Game Boy Advance games coming to Switch Online, I hope so. I would love that. Game Boy Advance had some really good games.
Yeah.
But no, I'm a little surprised that you gave it a perfect 10, but I don't disagree with it. It's
what,
like you said,
what would you give it?
Oh no, I would give it a 10 as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, how could you not?
If you're a Zelda fan, it's everything you want. And like you said, even though it doesn't take place in Hyrule and it doesn't feature Princess Zelda, it still has that. We talk about the Nintendo magic. There is a Zelda magic as well, and this game is full of it.
Yeah. If you're a fan of the top-down Zelda-type games, don't get me wrong, I thought Breath of the Wild was fantastic. Like, one of the best open-world games, you know, I've ever played. But like I said, there was just some things that were missing from it that just didn't feel like Zelda. Like, the whole, like, there's a whole genre of games, like, you know, the dungeon crawlers, that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Legend of Zelda. So having a Legend of Zelda game without dungeons is like, I don't know. It's like, what's a good comparison there?
It's almost like having a Mario game without the ability to jump.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, even though, I did kind of dig the shrines thing. But the shrines get old after a while. Like, I defeated that game. I finished the game, and I still haven't even done half the shrines in the game.
I didn't hate the change to the shrines, but since it's happened, I would much prefer them to go back to the dungeon aspect of
it. Yeah, I want dungeons. I want dungeons. I want loot. I want a loot grind, basically, mm-hmm. when it comes to Zelda. I want to find items. I want to find money and rupees and, new armor and new weapons and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I want from Breath of the Wild 2. And hopefully they bring back that aspect of Legend of Zelda.
Hopefully so.
I did enjoy the cooking, though. Cooking was one of my favorite things to do in the game.
Oh, the cooking was... I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. But once I got started, I'm like, I can get into this.
Yeah. Making all kind of weird stuff. And it was always for sure. Awesome when you're like just mixing together like random ingredients. And all of a sudden you hear that ping that you made something good. And you're like, ooh, what did I make?
Couldn't you make like apple pie?
Yeah, you can make all kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because I remember making some type of pie and I'm like, ooh, now I actually want it in real life.
Yeah, Axeblade said he can't wait to start playing it this weekend. I talked him into getting it the other day over the weekend. And sorry, man. I know I had to talk you into getting it. You're not going to be disappointed. Trust me.
We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I've probably put in, how many hours did it take you to beat it? I would say I've probably put anywhere from 12 to 14 hours so far into it, and I'm almost done.
As far as how many hours I was in when I beat Calamity Ganon, I'm not sure, but I've put over 100 hours into that game.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Link's Awakening.
Oh, Link's Awakening. Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. I think I put like 72 hours so far into Breath of the Wild. Link's Awakening, I think it would, they'll take you roughly, I'd say probably about between 12 and 15 hours to finish it.
Yeah, I can't remember because it's been a bit since I've played through it, but that sounds right.
It's a pretty lengthy game for being, something that was on the original Game Boy. And, it's weird because, man, this game has taken... it's the size of A Link to the Past, maybe a little bigger, the original world, even though A Link to the Past had two different worlds to go to.
Well, and if you think about it, you have eight dungeons,
yeah,
plus the final one. Then you have your side quest, you have the collectibles. So there's a lot to do in this game to keep you occupied. And yeah, to think that it was that big on the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's even more impressive.
I know. Mixmaster said his file was 190 hours. Dude, you're a maniac.
Man, I don't know if I put that much into it.
Wow.
Yeah, I gave up on trying to find all the Koroks.
Yeah, same here. But man, this game was so good. Axeblade, I'm glad you got it. And anybody out there that hasn't played it yet, do yourself a favor. If you have a Switch, get this for Christmas. It might still be on sale right now. I got it for $39 on the Switch store. It was on sale for, I think, 30% off. It's normally $60. So it's not a bad deal. I got $40 worth of entertainment so far out of it, I think. Lots of replay value, especially if you like the Zelda franchise. This is definitely one that needs to be in the collection. I really wish I'd have bought a physical version of it, but I couldn't pass up $40 for, a downloadable digital version. Because I would love to have this sitting on the shelf just because I'm that person. But if you're not worried about that and you're listening to this, just go pick it up. It's probably still on sale. And it's perfect. It's a perfect video game.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's this, I mean, there have been, I like most of the Zelda games, but there have been few that to me, like, capture a certain level of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them.
Yeah, I got so
I love Link's Awakening.
I got so many Links to the Past vibes playing this game. I was like, man, this I feel like I'm 13 years old again playing Link to the Past.
When you beat the final dungeon, let me know, because I really want to get your thoughts on the ending.
Oh, I will. I'll have it finished by this weekend, definitely.
Yeah, because I'll be curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I was trying so hard to finish it before the show tonight, but... Man, it's taken me... I'm kind of dumb when it comes to figure out some of the... I get stuck a lot in some of the dungeons, and it takes me a while to figure out what I'm supposed to do.
It happens to me, too.
Yeah, and sometimes I have to cheat.
That's right. Your secret's safe with me.
Oh, there was one dungeon, I think it was the second or third dungeon I was in. I just completely got stuck and had no idea what to do. And then I went around the dungeon like 20 times trying to figure out what to do. So I went to YouTube and watched a video, and I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. I missed one little thing that was right in front of me the whole time.
Was it the bottle grotto?
I think so. I think it was the bottle grotto.
The second one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's confusing.
Yeah. I can't even remember what it was. It was like I had to go kill a shy guy or something like that, and it just completely went right over my head. Something so simple, and it just went right over my head, because I was overthinking it, like I usually do.
No, I feel you on that one.
And that's the trick of Zelda. Sometimes you find yourself overthinking it, and you get stuck, and you get frustrated. So sometimes if I just stop and walk away from it for a little while, I'll come back in like an hour or so, and it's like, oh, there it is right in front of me.
Yeah.
Axeplay said Luigi's Mansion was on sale for $30 on a Walmart flash sale. Wow. I would have picked that up, too. That's not bad.
The new Luigi's Mansion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the new one. I just haven't sat down and played it yet.
Yeah,
that might be one that I do during Christmas.
Yeah, this was supposed to be my Christmas game, but I'm almost finished, so I'm going to have to find a good Christmas game in the next few weeks. And like I said, I'd love to play Doom Eternal, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it on the Switch because of that file size.
Yeah.
So I might have to get something else for the Switch. And I'm actually kind of thinking about just getting the original Resident Evil, because they have it on the Switch store for $20, and I kind of want to review that.
Yeah.
Might do that. I might get Resident Evil 3 for PS4, because I've been wanting to play that too.
Now that sounds great.
But we're coming up on the end of the show. Is there anything you wanted to throw out there before we leave this evening?
Yeah, just actually before we did the show live, I did a live edition of the Derek Diamond Experience where I list my top 5 Christmas movies, trying to get into the Christmas spirit. So the audio version of that will be out by the time you listen to this on the download. So if you enjoy Christmas movies, check that out. I've got some fun interviews coming up over the next couple of weeks. So as always, be sure to follow the show on social media at @DDiamondPodcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday on all podcasting platforms.
My top 5 Christmas movies are Christmas Vacation, Christmas Vacation, Christmas Vacation, Die Hard, and Christmas Vacation.
I knew you had to throw Die Hard in there.
You know,
it is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's a Christmas movie. And if you don't agree, then unsubscribe right now from our show. I did watch both of the Christmas Chronicles movies on Netflix over the weekend. If you haven't watched those, they're actually really good. I love
that
Kurt
was
Russell.
That was on Rampage's list that he sent, was the first one.
I actually like the second one better than the first one.
I need to watch those. I need to start getting into like the Christmas movie watching.
Yeah, you'll definitely like them. Kurt Russell plays a really good Santa Claus.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, it's really, and if anybody out there, if you haven't watched the Christmas Chronicles yet, it definitely put me in the Christmas spirit watching those this last weekend.
No, I'm excited to check those out.
As far as me, tomorrow night, join us right here at 7:00 p.m. Central for Open Micers with me and comedian Jacob Craig. We're going to be talking to Sherry Nelson. She's an actress and producer. She was in John Wick Chapter 2 and It and something called Beverly Hills 90210. Duh. Okay. I'm dumb. So she's going to be on tomorrow night. And you can find that at Open Micers on Twitter and Open Micers on Facebook. And follow me at JFunktastic on Twitter. So I think that's going to do it for this week. Is that everything?
I think so.
God, we took like that week off, and now I can't remember how to do the show.
Having to shake off the rust still.
I can't remember how to show. How do I show, Derek?
How do I podcast?
How do I do this? I don't know.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
If you'd like to email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. We're at nerdcaveretro.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at nerdcaveretro and individually at jfunktastic and at Derek_diamond. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdcaveretro. And of course, we're on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro, where if you throw us a couple of bucks a month, keep the lights on. We will continue to do those commentary tracks if we stay above the $50 a month level. And I know you guys like those, so keep throwing us the cash. And if you can't do that, please leave us a review wherever fine podcasts are given away for free. So Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
May the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.
Yes.
Wise men say forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.